Welcome to Transition, Gadget 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Call of Duty Black Ops 4 because there have been some rumors around it being a Battle.net exclusive. And we are also going to be talking about the Nintendo Switch online service. It's been long pending, but we finally heard some official announcements regarding the launch date and some of the important features of this service. So to do that, we have our games editor Rishi Alwani.
Hey.
And friend of the podcast, Mikhail Madnani.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah, for a change, we are not recording in the morning. And as you can hear from Rishi's enthusiasm, he is clearly, you know, out of his time zone again.
He seems to have curbed his enthusiasm.
Bring back morning podcasts. Thank you very much.
All right. So, first thing on the agenda is Call of Duty Black Ops 4. Now, this BNet rumor, is it like coming from concrete sources?
So, what happened was, I think, Monday morning, a site called Gaming Intel posted a story along with screenshots saying that, citing a source close to development and a source obviously close to Call of Duty publisher Activision, that Call of Duty Black Ops 4 on PC will not be coming to Steam. It'll be exclusive to Battle.net. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Battle.net is Activision Blizzard's PC client. It's used for games like Diablo 3, it's used for games like World of Warcraft, and most recently it was used for Destiny 2. This is a big deal because all Call of Duty games on PC since their inception were on Steam, since the very first Call of Duty onwards. So for them to actually go ahead and move platforms to Battle.net is a big deal. And the reason for this is also, at least according to the report at Gaming Intel, was that Activision is looking to, you know, claim all the revenue. They're not happy with just the 70% that they get when putting a game on Steam. If they have in their own service, they can get the full 100%. And they're so adamant on the idea that they're even having that the QA team, the quality assurance team for Black Ops for PC, is a separate team from the quality assurance team that's working on the console versions of the game, which means they're dead serious about ensuring every bug is crushed and everything is in working order. And the other thing of interest was that the report also claimed that Black Ops 4 on PC, Battle.net, will be scaled to allow for cross-platform play. Now, what this means is, similar to Fortnite, where, you know, if you're playing on iOS, you can play against people on PS4, or if you're playing on PC, you can be playing against people on Xbox One. A similar kind of functionality will be built into Battle.net. Now, this is huge for a bunch of things. Activision's obviously chasing that sweet, sweet Battle Royale money that Fortnite seems to have unlocked. And it further lends credence to previous rumors that Black Ops 4 will be having a Battle Royale mode. Now, again, obviously, at this point in time, there's no concrete, aside from a bunch of reports, there's no concrete proof that Treyarch is actually getting rid of the single-player campaign. But if you look at where all the investments are going, it seems that multiplayer is going to be on the forefront of this game. Now, what this also means is that we could see a game with a higher price point. We saw this with Destiny 2, which ended up being, close to $349.99 on PC. And we could see Black Ops 4 also sporting a higher price.
Now, pricing for Call of Duty has been on the rise for a long time. In fact, last year and the year before that, I believe there were price errors on certain websites or Steam where people managed getting the game with the season pass much cheaper than they should have. Now, the move to Battle.net isn't surprising. Like, Activision has said that Destiny 2 was their largest per unit launch on the PC platform ever, which means at whatever price people bought the base Destiny 2 game at was, is higher than everything Activision has launched on PC until that date. Now, Treyarch doing a Call of Duty game is a very big deal for PC players in general because they usually are the best to support the game, add PC-specific features, modding tools, stuff like that. In fact, in a lot of cases, we actually know people who refuse to buy Call of Duty games on PC unless it's being done by Treyarch because those games usually have a very high concurrent player base. In fact, Black Ops 3 now is probably getting more people playing than both the newer Call of Duties which came out after that. So them doing this with the Treyarch one will ensure that more people are willing to give it a shot on Battle.net. And pricing-wise, that's to be expected that the price is going to go up. Gaming or prices of everything in general is slowly rising. Like any game which you bought last year, if there's a new entry in that franchise, this year expect 200 to 500 rupee increase across the board, regardless of what console you're playing on. Because we've already seen this with Red Dead Redemption, which is now Red Dead Redemption 2, which is listed for $399 on PS4 and Xbox One. $60 games usually are $3,499 in India, but both Ubisoft with Far Cry 5 and now Rockstar with Red Dead Redemption 2 have moved to $399, which is what people should expect as the new base.
Yeah, and the reason for this has to do with, aside from a slight increase in duties, is also the fact that you have foreign currency fluctuations that ensure that $4,000 will probably end up being the standard. Now, the other thing to also keep in mind is that if the rumor of Call of Duty Black Ops 4 coming to PC is true, sources close to the company state that Treyarch is aware of the possible backlash of them abandoning Steam, and they're looking to make Black Ops 4 the most well-optimized Black Ops since Black Ops 2 back in 2011-2012. So they are aware that, yeah, there is going to be some backlash when it eventually gets announced, and they're looking to make the Battle.net version really good. But to be honest, I don't know how much of a backlash there will be, because with Destiny 2, I mean, it ran really well on PC, and there were no complaints. The Battle.net, while some quote-unquote dyed-in-wool hardcore PC enthusiasts might have issues with Battle.net, fact of the matter is it's been around longer than Steam. It's been around, it's probably one of the oldest, longest-running online services since it's been around since the days of StarCraft 1. So, and Diablo 2. So my point is, you're in pretty good hands. The service is mature. The backend is fantastic. And at least from my point of view, I've used it almost exclusively for all of Blizzard's games. And there hasn't been a time when I haven't had an issue. I mean, anytime I've had an issue with their tech support, they've always been really quick to reverse it. So I think whoever's worried, you're in good hands. These guys know what they're doing. But yeah, I will agree that don't expect this to be a cheap version of the game.
Yeah, but what does concern me a lot, especially when it comes to PC gaming, is that now every publisher seems to have its own client. And does that really make sense in terms of like for gamers, it's not really a good thing, right? Because you can't really expect great discounts on anything.
Well, I don't know. So I look at it this way. Let's break down how many clients you actually need on your PC right now. Everyone has Steam, because Steam is where everyone would go to. At least by and large, it's a de facto for everyone. Everyone has Steam. If you're the sort who plays FIFA, if you're the sort who plays Star Wars, if you're the sort who plays Battlefield, you or Titanfall for that matter, or Mass Effect, yeah, you'll need Origin, whether you like it or not. All right. Most of Ubisoft stuff is on Steam as well, so you don't really need Uplay. But they're trying to get people to shift over to Uplay, so I don't know how that's gonna pan out. But Uplay isn't exactly critical at this juncture. If you've been playing World of Warcraft, if you've been playing Overwatch, you need Battle.net anyway. And if you've been playing everyone's favorite game du jour, Fortnite Battle Royale, you're using Epic's launcher. So whether you like it or not, it's like when you switch on your PC, you're going to have a bunch of clients staring you in the face as you figure out what to do next. Personally, I have...
Which one is League of Legends again?
Well, League of Legends is its own server. It's its own thing. It's just League. It's Riot's own client. And even there, that's another thing in itself. And it actually then... And then when you actually look at it, it's quite fascinating, because for the longest time, common consensus used to be that PC gaming is equal to Steam. But if you actually think about it, the world beyond Steam is just as large, if not larger. And there are experiences to be had which are just as good. I mean, personally, I'm using Steam and GOG, more GOG than Steam, because I like the fact that you actually have a certain degree of ownership, and the fact that you don't have any DRM attached to your games. So personally, I'm using GOG. I have Steam for the other stuff as and when needed, work purposes mainly, and Battle.net for in the event I decide to play games other than Diablo on PC. But then, yeah, most people will at least have 2 to 3 clients at any given time, and that's the way it's going. The way I see it going forward, it's going to get even more fragmented. I'm sure Bethesda is going to try something with their games. It's just a matter of time before Square Enix even decides to do something similar. They've already done it with Final Fantasy XIV. And I won't be surprised if we see developers and publishers take it forward where they break away from Steam. Because you have to understand that the problem with Steam right now is discoverability. It's really tough for developers to get seen. It's really tough for games to get noticed. And it's not going to get easier. To be honest with you, it's reached a point where I feel like the only other platform that's in a worse state in terms of finding cool stuff is probably Google Play. So
Google actually has been doing a much better job at showing you at least decent quality games and stuff on the in the featured section. Steam has nothing. Steam will relegate everything to someone else. They've just added curators and they assume those people are going to take care of it. But curators, I'm glad they finally let you ignore it and I can stop using enhanced Steam to like hide this stuff and all, because most of that stuff is pretty terrible in general. So they just rely on the users and crowdsourcing everything until someone sues them, like with the CSGO Lotto thing where they'll suddenly wake up and do something about it. So I don't know, like it's... Like PC gamers should expect a lot of the big guys to slowly move out in some form. Bethesda, yeah, definitely. I feel like they'll do it at some point. They already have their own launcher for Elder Scrolls Online, even though they sell that on Steam. But if any publisher can pull this off, it's Bethesda, because their games sell like crazy across all platforms. And they have a huge PC install base in general for the Elder Scrolls games. So
yeah, and forget Bethesda. I mean, if we're already going to see this happen with Activision. And the moment that happens, it should be a wake-up call to Valve as well. Because let's be honest here, as a publisher, what are you getting? You're giving away 30%, but you're not getting the visibility you need. And to be honest with you, a lot of it has to stem from the fact that, as Mike said, a lot of if you want to find a new game on Steam, it's really tough because Valve's leaving it up to algorithms instead of actually curating a storefront. And to me, that's where I think, as much as I hate to say it, a lot of the store, that's where, if you ask me, PlayStation Network has a right idea by curating games, letting you see them even. So like, for example, this month is all about God of War on PlayStation Network. So you get to see what Corey Barlog picks up as his favorite games. He's a creative director of God of War. When Nier Automata came out, you had the same situation. Yoko Taro was actually suggesting cool stuff. And that's a way to curate stuff to ensure stuff is fresh. Along with the fact that, yeah, when new games are out, you see them up front on PlayStation Network. You see them up front on Xbox Live. But when it comes to Steam, because Gabe in his infinite wisdom prefers to choose algorithms, you never see what's really good. You never see what's really new. You never see what needs to be seen. There is no human editorial. And that, to me, is a big problem. And that's where I think Apple, if you ask me, while, yeah, sure, the verdicts, the jury's out there on whether the App Store redesign is good or not, I think it's a step in the right direction. Because let's be honest, today you're in a situation where not everyone wants to spend $60 or 4,000 rupees on a huge, massive, open world, always online games as a service circus.
Yeah, basically everything that Xbox P3 loves.
Yeah. So my point is, where are you going to find those? The options are indie titles, right? And they're tough to find. They're legitimately tough to find on Steam. They're not that tough on other platforms. And even the bigger publishers are having problems. I mean, we've seen this with a host of Japanese developers where after the first game released, second and third games don't do as well as they should. So, I mean, yeah, Steam has a problem. And if there's anyone who's going to give Valve the wake-up call, it's Activision. I think it's a step in the right direction.
But there's also the fact that Activision has put up the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy, which is the remake which released on PS4 last year, which is coming up like PC, Xbox One and Switch in June or July, I believe. That's available on Steam for pre-order. So it might seem like they aren't fully confident in ditching Steam all the way. It's also, there's like a small possibility that they actually refund people and say, you know what, we're just going all in on BNet and Crash is going to be there. But doing it with Destiny and Call of Duty, you know, the multiplayer and service-focused games is a smarter idea to get more people invested in the ecosystem before pulling out completely and then putting your smaller titles as well. Like Spyro, the Reignited Trilogy right now is PS4 and Xbox only. If Call of Duty, and it probably will do well on Battle.net, they might just throw that on Battle.net as well when they announce it eventually, if they do actually at this stage. So
yeah.
Yeah, so is there anything else you guys want to say about this topic or can we move on?
Let's move on to more amusing pastures known as Nintendo. Welcome to 2005.
Yeah, exactly. So what has happened is Nintendo has announced its online service, which has been pending for a very long time. I think March 2017 is when the Nintendo Switch first came around. And we haven't had a proper online service since then. So until now, you could really enjoy all games like their online play, etc., for free, and all the associated complaints you would always temper them with, okay, but at least I'm not paying for it, so who cares. Then now, from September onwards, Nintendo Switch will have a paid online component. So for games such as Splatoon, ARMS, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you will be paying if you want to play online with your friends or with random people. So Rishi, why don't you tell us more about this service?
Yeah, so I mean, aside from being able to play with your friends, the other cool thing is Nintendo's, at least to start with, will have 20 NES games, Nintendo Entertainment System, or Famicom, as it's also known, games, available on the service to play, like Legend of Zelda or Mario Brothers. And that's something you can check out as well. And you can even play them with a friend at the, offline. They're trying to push the whole local co-op mechanic on this well as well, which used to be the case back in the day. The other thing which is also of interest is, if you're the sort who wants to save your progress or save your save files, the only way you can do it is via this service. The cloud save functionality is limited to this. Now, it's really telling because on PC with Steam, you can basically have cloud backups. They're essentially free.
Xbox Live.
Xbox Live also free. Battle.net to an extent as well. And even on PlayStation Network, even if you even though you have to pay with PS Plus for cloud saves, you have the option of sticking in a USB drive and backing up your save files. So point is, this is like there is no. I mean, so you have to pay if you want to back it up, which is really tragic to me because what's stopping Nintendo from just letting you stick in a thumb drive when you're connected in dock
or saving to micro SD cards.
There you go.
So the problem is, Microsoft doesn't let you copy saves to USB, but they are doing it for free, backing it up for free. So they aren't forcing you into their online service. Nintendo is basically forcing. Now, granted, it's not expensive when you compare it to the other services, like $60 for PS Plus for a year. This is $20 or 20 euros, depending on which account you buy it on. And yeah, there's another thing to make clear over here. If you buy it on one account on that console, you can't actually go online on the other accounts unless you add them to a family sharing plan, which costs more. And also, we don't know if this plan carries over across different regions yet. On PS4, if I have PS Plus on a US account, if I have an Indian account on that console, I can play online on that. In fact, I've done that in the past with Street Fighter V as well. So it's kind of like not a good showing for them to do that. And their other justification for online is you'll get like at launch 20 NES or Nintendo Entertainment System games with online functionality or co-op or leaderboards functionality added. I mean, like, come on, no one's going to pay $20 a year to play Balloon Fight online. No one cares about that. People who did bought an NES Classic Mini already. And the worst part out of all of this is, regardless of the price, like if they were charging $80 also, I don't really care that much. You still have to use that stupid region-locked online app. And the app is pretty garbage in general. So like, suppose Pranay and I want to play Splatoon 2 online in the same team. Both of us need to be friends on the Nintendo Switch. Both of us need to have Splatoon, the Nintendo Switch online service app installed on our phones, logged in. You need to have a headset connected to the phone if you care about voice chat. Then you need to squad up using the app and then get onto the console and then play. While if both of us wanted to play Overwatch, I just invite him from Overwatch friends list in the thing which borrows from PSN or Xbox Live or the Battle.net list, and we get to play immediately. And we can even use Discord if we need to.
Yeah. And the other part is, let's look at the costing, all right? An individual membership per month is $4. If you're looking for 3 months, it's $8. And for 12 months, it's $20, all right? That seems fair at the outset. But here's something a lot of you kids are forgetting, because this is the case with every subscription service since the beginning of time. It's going to start cheap, and then it's going to ramp up. And when it ramps up, you're going to feel the pinch. We've seen this happen with PS Plus. We've seen this happen with Amazon Prime in countries that aren't India. And this is definitely going to be the case. So
don't forget Xbox Live Games with Gold in India. They doubled the price almost in January 2017.
There we go. So my point is, expect this $20 price to be there for a year or two, and then expect them to raise the price or reduce quality of service. The problem is Nintendo can't afford to reduce quality of service because
you're already at rock bottom, basically.
Exactly. And you're starting and you're basically creating an online infrastructure when there wasn't any. The Wii didn't have a proper online infrastructure, neither did the Wii U. And this is their first shot at it. Now, how they work this out is going to be fun to see. How they because at the end of the day, let's be honest here, E3 is going to be all about Smash Brothers for them. All right, they'll want to make sure that game gets top billing. They'll want to make sure that Mario Kart 8 still sustains with online play, and Splatoon 2 for that matter. So my point is, when you have these experiences already there that support online play, you need to make sure the infrastructure is just as good now that you're charging for it. The second thing that's going to be of amusement is, I'm just shocked to see that there are no proper plans in place for voice chat on the Switch, which means that you're pretty much restricted to using either their app, which is painful, or team up with your friends on Discord or something else. But long story short, there's no easy way to do it. And to me, it just seems like Nintendo doesn't like voice chat. Simple as that.
Yeah, clearly. So the whole voice chat thing, what Mike said earlier, the app is not available on the Indian App Store on iOS. And if I am not mistaken, even on Google Play, you can't download
it. It's not.
That
you need
app.
To sideload, or you need to use another account. Like, I use it because I downloaded it from my UK iTunes account, which I created for when there were some apps which weren't available here, which now are available. But yeah, here's another use for this.
But I have to say, though, the pricing for the family plan especially is pretty decent.
Yeah, I expect a lot of people to abuse that. I expect a lot of friends to team up with other friends, and eight people essentially pay $35.
Yeah. It comes to about $4 something per year per person if this works in the end. But I mean, people already do this for Netflix, Spotify, and also...
Yeah, even with PS Plus, a lot of people do this as well. But
it's two devices
now
there,
it's
right?
Two devices.
Yeah, but like, I don't see them worrying too much about this because... I've already seen some discussion online about how Nintendo should restrict this so that people don't exploit it. Well, we don't know any details about how they're going to implement the family plan, whether it works across regions or how it works. I keep emphasizing this, whether it works across regions, because a lot of people will need more than one account. In some cases, games like Lego Worlds, they came with a code for two pieces of DLC. Now, if you buy that in the US, if you import it from India, or if you buy it while you're traveling in Europe, you need to make a UK account to redeem the code. You can still play the game on your US account, but that's how these things are. Not every developer is like an indie or like Nintendo also in some cases, where one code works across all regions for DLC at least. I mean, you can download it, it'll show up as purchased and all, but yeah, it's a little messy when it comes to some AAA publishers.
Yeah,
on the
region
Switch.
Free with like a massive giant size asterisk next to it.
Yeah, it's the same as PS10, basically. It's not like Xbox where regardless of who gives you a code, you can just redeem it unless the game is actually not available in your region, which I've experienced in the past.
Yep. Mm.
Yeah, but what definitely gets to me is that after showing off all that co-op offline play and all that in their keynote in like January 2017, I think, now they are showing this, you know, online service, which sort of makes it mandatory to be online. Essentially, if you want to get your cloud saves, like saves backed up and play on another console if you have that. So it's a big bummer for me. Like, they should definitely allow people to sort of have their save files on a micro SD card as an option. If nothing else, and they shouldn't like make it like a cloud only thing.
I think this is one of the precautions of them trying to prevent exploits or whatever, because in a lot of cases, that's how you do get some stuff. But then the Switch has technically been exploited, and there's apparently an exploit coming out very soon for it, which cannot be patched because it's on a hardware level, it seems. So I don't know what they're doing, but yeah, this is they basically just need to find ways to make people realize that they need to pay online to get the full experience on Switch, and this is one of them.
Yeah, it's really sad.
Because imagine you have 200 hours in Breath of the Wild or Xenoblade Chronicles 2. You'd pay $20 a year for peace of mind just knowing that your save is backed up in case something happens to the console or whatever.
So, yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with Mike on this. It just seems that they're trying to find a way to brute force some value onto the system, and this seems to be the most... path of least resistance.
Yeah, but if I was spending 200 hours in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, then I would also like to have the peace of mind of a local backup apart from an online backup, because I don't trust their online
one
service.
One step at a time is how I'd put it. But they also said that they will have some special offers which will be available only to members who have their paid service. Now, given how, to put it lightly, garbage most of the sales are on the Switch in terms of discounts for first-party software, I think like going forward, they'll just reduce the discounts they give to non-paying members, and the normal discounts will just appear for paying members. Because for a lot of people who buy a lot digitally on consoles, the yearly subscription gets offset by the amount of savings you get with deals for gold and PS Plus discounts in general. So $20 is something you can save basically buying a few games if they price their discounts like other platforms. But they don't. So we'll have to see how that works out. They've just like dropped all this information out in the morning as of this recording. And I bet we'll have more information, and the Smash Brothers for Switch release date being the same as the online service when they announce it at E3. Like, that's just too obvious at this stage. So
yeah.
So, what I did not like see anywhere is mention of any virtual console updates.
No, I think that's...
Virtual console is pretty dead at this point. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't, you wouldn't see a lot of these other smaller publishers and larger publishers like Bandai Namco doing Namco Museum, which is a $20 collection of their old games, or Sega announcing the Sega Ages collection, which is separate games coming from across their library, and Hamster doing Neo Geo Classics, and a lot of other developers just porting their games directly as separate smaller price titles. So the virtual console as we knew it with Nintendo titles at least seems dead. And I don't think these 20 games which have online enabled will go outside the first party or second party releases. In fact, I wouldn't expect Contra Online to be a thing. So, yeah.
Cool then. So, I think we can safely move on to the games we've been playing this week.
Yeah, go for it, Pranay. We know what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
We're nearly there.
I finally have a platinum trophy on the PS4 thanks to Nier Automata.
So, you basically bought all the trophies.
Trophy shop, yeah. Okay, so then what I did was I finished the game main story. It was a killer story. Really loved it. And like in this game, essentially you have to play through thrice to finish the game, as I mentioned in previous episodes of the podcast. So first playthrough, you play as 2B. Second playthrough, you play as 9S. And then third playthrough is like again much faster than the second one. And that is where you sort of get more of the story. Play as another character called A2, who in the end turned out to be my favorite character among the bunch. Simply because, you know, like her actions seem to be much more logical. And also, like, that is a character that puts other people's actions into context later. So, loved the story, loved all the endings. And yeah, there are A, B, C, D, and E. 5 endings which you have to get if you want to complete this game. Don't worry about the joke endings. Those are like, you know, if you are a completionist, yeah, sure, go for it. Or accidentally, sometimes you'll just mess up and you'll get one of those endings. Cool. So, I finished the game, enjoyed it a lot. Then after finishing the game, I went to the trophy shop, saw that bronze trophies are available for 50,000 G each and gold for 200,000 each, silver for 100,000. So, what I did is I created a manual save in the second slot and bought trophies there, finished up all my cash, then came back to the first one, reloaded the save, then went again, manual save to the second one, bought all the trophies, and that's how I got all trophies and got a platinum trophy in this.
Exploiting the system?
It's not exploiting the system. You know, this was the game designer's vision. Like Yoko Taro, the creator, this is commentary on the trophy system in PlayStation being useless.
One of those now.
Anything to justify
previously
what I did.
On gaming at Gadgets 360. We've turned into culture at Gadgets 360. But yeah, I agree with you, Pranay. I mean, if it's there in the system and if you're able to use it, how is it an exploit? You're using it as it was intended.
Yeah. Cool then. What have you guys been playing?
Been playing more God of War. I think I have just a few hours left in it. Still stand by the fact that it's like amazing. Some of the cinematography in the game is like mind-blowing. Definitely took a few videos which I can't post because I don't want to spoil anything for people. But yeah, it's really, really good. The combat is really good. Enemy design is really good. Everything is just like really good so far. Even the music has now reached the stage where I don't need to complain about no Amon Amarth music being a thing in it. Other than that, been playing Fire Emblem Warriors on 3DS because just playing it on 3DS, taking a break from the Switch version, still holds up really well. It's much better than Hyrule Warriors on 3DS because this one was new 3DS only, while Hyrule Warriors quote-unquote runs on even the older one. It's the Fire Emblem Warriors, basically a mashup between Fire Emblem and Koei Tecmo's Dynasty Warriors or Samurai Warriors franchise, with Fire Emblem characters and enemies and all. Good fun if you like Fire Emblem, but if you don't, you should play Fire Emblem in general, not this. Other than that, also been playing a bit of Hearthstone here and there. Yeah, basically just that.
Yeah, so since you mentioned music, Nier Automata's music also deserves special mention. Really, really good soundtrack. Unfortunately, I can't find it on Apple Music or iTunes.
Because I actually bought it on iTunes the day it released, even though I had a physical copy I imported from Japan, and Square Enix, in their infinite wisdom, has delisted and removed all their music from people's purchase histories and iTunes India, including Apple Music. So yes, that's a thing.
Really sad. Anyway, Rishi.
So I've been playing Dragon's Crown Pro. A review should be going up by the time this podcast is up as well. It's an interesting game. A lot of systems, a lot of layers, and mainly gameplay focused, despite it looking really good. I mean, if you ask me, I think this is the most, in a way, the most needless remake because it looked so good when it came out back in 2013 with its watercolor, cel-shaded art style that you wonder why they remade it. But it looks really nice on a 4K display, and the frame rate holds up well. So I've been playing a lot of that. It's an action RPG with a narrator similar to how a Dungeons & Dragons campaign would work out. So it's quite fun. And it's quite short too, like I think 10 or 12 hours for the first playthrough. So I've been playing a lot of that. And I've been playing a Warframe, which is surprisingly good. The traversal mechanics are second to none. And there seems to be a promising story, unlike another online connected shooter called Destiny 2. So yeah, this is seeming to be promising. Mainly been playing those two and a bit of Overwatch because the new map Rialto has been out. So been checking that out too.
All right then, that's all we have for this episode of Transition, and we will see you with another episode next week. And as always, you can write to us with your questions, comments and feedback at podcast@gadgets360.com. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulsen, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening, and if you like our show, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube and Instagram at gadgets360. You can subscribe to it and rate us on iTunes, and you can also go to the Google app on your Android phone and just search for Transition Podcast Gadgets 360 and subscribe. Thank you so much for listening.